If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
I sat down with Coach Knight at his home in Bloomington yesterday at a 3.5-4 hour chance to talk with him, and we're playing the interview for you tonight on Sports Central. Coach, it's been a little over a week. How are you feeling emotionally? How's Karen, Pat, and Tim? That's something, obviously, that was such a shock.
Well, I think that none of us feel very good about it, David, and particularly not just the way it's been handled for the past 5 months, but the things that have been brought up as quote unquote a series of incidents. So it's not something that any of us close to it have been very pleased with.
Do you feel like you were set up to fail?
Well, I don't know. I think somewhere along the way, this administration and I, the athletic administration and the university administration, for 5 years, it's been a bad match. It has not been, and maybe that's, I don't know whose fault that is, it's just a bad match. What could have eliminated all of this is, instead of all the chicanery and the charades and the fabrication of things, is all they needed to do was come to me and say, we don't want you here any longer as our basketball coach. That's all I would have needed. I've said that since the day I got here, that when the time came that they no longer wanted me as a coach, then just tell me, and I'll go on down the road to something else. When I first came here in 1971, the way I did the interview with the four people on the interview committee was this. I was asked by the chairman of the committee if I would like to ask questions, would I like to answer questions, or would we like to do a combination of both? And I said, if you'll give me 15 minutes, I'll give you the basketball program that I'll bring to Indiana. And that's the way it'll be. If you like that, we can discuss it, the whole idea of my coming to Indiana, as long as you want. If you don't like it, then you've only taken 15 minutes of your time, because this is a way that I'll have the program and I'll run it while I'm there. And you know Bob Hamill, who's a former sports editor of the paper here, and I've told him since day one that when they got tired of the way I did things, just tell me and I'll move on. And that's all that had to be done here, instead of the fabrication of a lot of reasons that really are reasons that don't coincide with what my contractual obligations are in many cases.
You said on your interview the other night that you'd been around 43 or 44 different administrators.
43,
and that 38 of them you got along great with.
There are, until this past 5 years, I think there were 38 people that I felt that I had worked for, and that I had that I'd really gotten along well with 36 of those people. I mean, really well with them, both here and at the military academy. And now the number has increased to a total of 43, and there are of those 43 people, and I'm talking about a president, a superintendent, a commandant, a vice president, a board of trustee, an athletics committee chairman at West Point, whatever. And now of 43 people that I feel like I've worked under during my career in college coaching, there are only five that I didn't get along with. And three of them are a part of this administration. And I felt that for 5 years. I mean, I just felt that this was not a situation for me. I wasn't the coach for these people. And so I had a couple of things to do, David, and a couple of ways to look at this. I could have just said, this is enough for me. And I think had we been where I wanted us to be, had this been 1992 or 93, when Chaney and Bailey and the Grahams and all the players that we had then were playing, and we were perhaps the best or certainly among the best teams in the country at that time, I think that would have been a good time for me to leave. But after another couple of years went by, we were still good. We still were competitive with the situations in which we were playing, both in the league and out of the league for the most part. But we weren't really as good as I wanted us to be. And I think I almost became obsessed with getting us back to being as good as our best teams were. And I think that kind of clouded maybe a more intelligent approach that I might have had at that time. And that would have been, hey, you know, this just isn't a situation for me anymore. Instead of just saying, okay, I'll handle that and I'll get us back where we were. There were two things that I think entered into it. One was smart and one was right here in May. The smart thing there for me to do, as soon as the thing about this Reed kid even came up, that had been gone through 3 years ago, and as soon as that came up and was turned into what it was turned into, that's the point when I should have left here, and I understand that now, and that would have been far and away the smartest thing that I could have done. This was an indication that I'm not wanted here as a coach because of how that was handled and what transpired after that, and the things that were brought up after that, some of them going back as far as 25 years. And that's where I wasn't as smart as I like to think I am in handling a lot of things. I did what I felt was the right thing, and that was to stay with the kids that we have. You know, we've got George Leach fighting for another year of eligibility. We had four freshmen coming in that were coming from various parts of the country to come here and play. We had kids that had come here because of our basketball program, knowing absolutely nothing about Indiana. So I think that I had and felt I had a real obligation to the kids to stay. And yet, what took place in the situation with all that came out during the months of April and May, and the way it was handled, and the fact that at no time did I ever have a chance to be confronted with, these are the reasons why we are considering your termination. And at no time, other than the situation with Reed and these two trustees, Eichhorn and Walda, I talked to them for an hour and 45 minutes, and Eichhorn never once took a note. Never once took a note on anything that I said. And Walda, seven different times, mentioned how much pressure he was under. And I told him, you ought to coach once and see what pressure is like. I said, you're not under any pressure. When the two of them left my office, I turned to my wife and I said, this is not going to go anywhere that's going to be right or just or anything else. I said, these guys are so afraid of what somebody in the media is going to say about them that there's no chance for this to turn out right. The things that came up back in May, David, were an allegation of my using profanity with the athletic director's secretary in a, as she described it, a verbal tirade, which is absolutely untrue. That's just an outright lie. There were two football coaches in an adjacent room that said they couldn't even really hear what I said. And that I couldn't have talked for longer than 15 or 20 seconds. And if I'd have even raised my voice, they would have had to hear what I had to say. There was a second thing coming from her. That was about 3 years ago. There was a second thing coming from her that I'd thrown a potted plant in the athletic director's office. In being upset with the athletic director, and I couldn't even recall that incident until a friend of mine from the West Coast called me, named Phil Vukicevic, who was with Adidas at the time. And Phil told me that he and I were walking out of the athletic director's office, and we had just been notified, both Ralph Floyd, our AD, and myself, that I was to be fined because I hit a table in Cincinnati at the regional tournament that year and popped the telephone off its cradle up into the air. And we were both very upset about that. And as we all walked out of Ralph's office, I backhanded a little pot sitting there, knocked it against the wall, and broke it. And Phil told me that this secretary in question wasn't even in the office at the time, let alone in line of anything that I had knocked in any way. And Phil said that I didn't throw it, I just backhanded into the wall. And so then another thing was brought up that happened 25 years ago. And so once that happened, and once I saw how untruthful these things were, that's when I had to, I told you that 5 years ago, I knew that I was a bad fit for this administration. That's when I should have left. But these kids, I wanted to stay. I wanted to have a chance to coach these kids that we had recruited, and that kind of just overrode my sense of what was happening and what was taking place at that time. And those are the only incidents that I was even made aware of in this entire series of incidents that supposedly put me into this position where we had this zero tolerance policy. The president here has said repeatedly that zero tolerance was explained. Well, it wasn't explained. And in fact, the week prior to my termination, I asked the vice president to explain zero tolerance. I said, explain the phrase zero tolerance. What does it mean? And he said, I can't do it, nor can anybody else. Now, the policy was outlined that I had to do this and do this and do that. But if I get a technical foul, is that a violation of zero tolerance? If I get on a player during a game, what is a violation of zero tolerance? Who determines that this is a violation? When I stopped the kid and tried to teach a kid a little courtesy that he obviously hadn't learned at home, the president then said, well, inappropriate physical contact would be determined by the person receiving the contact. So the way I explained that was that you're a student and you're walking through the lobby at Assembly Hall, and you say something to me like, hey coach, good luck, have a good season, let's get so. And as I walk by, I kind of whack you on the back and I said thanks, I said have a good day. Well, what if I whack you on the shoulder, which has always been my approach to kids and as long as I can remember, and now you go to somebody and say, well, that was inappropriate physical contact. I sure as heck haven't meant anything other than to say, hey, thanks. I appreciate your interest, your support. I explained to a young lady that was a reporter for the Daily Student, I said, let's say that I walk into my class, which I've taught here for 28 years with absolutely no compensation. And what if I walked into my class and you're there and I put my hand on your back, you're turned to me and I need to get by you, and I just simply say, miss, excuse me. Now, in almost all cases, that wouldn't even be thought of as anything even remotely exceptional. But what if you, in fact, decided that my placing my hand on your back and asking you to excuse me was inappropriate physical contact? I don't think there was any way that all this goes back to, was I set up? I think I was put in a position where surely something will happen that we can nail this guy for. We get into this latest series of incidents, and one was that I don't follow the chain of command in the athletic department. Well, let me read a thing to you right out of my contract And then I'll ask you a question. During the period that coach is head basketball coach, he shall have approval of all matters associated with men's varsity basketball at Indiana University, including but not limited to the following: facilities for practice, scheduling of games, exhibitions, tournaments, scrimmages, and related matters. Practice time for men's varsity basketball. Recommended persons selected as radio and television announcers. Selection of staff to include trainer, coaches, secretaries, and publicists. All of those things, but not limited to those things. Now, my question that I ask you is, what chain of command do I need to follow to operate men's basketball here in Indiana?
Sounds like you have final authority in all matters.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's the way I set this up. And that's essentially what I brought with me in 1971 here when I was first talked to about the basketball job. I said, here's the program that I'll bring with me. If it's something that you would like, let's talk about it. If it isn't, let's both go different ways, because this is the way I'll run things. And when I had an opportunity to set up a different contract in 1981 and 82, this is the way that I set it up contractually, just to make sure that in the event that down the road somewhere I ran into somebody that decided that he wanted to run basketball his way, that it could always be done the way I wanted it done and the way I felt it should be done, which I think has been pretty good over the years. I see where the president talks about a return to academics. You know, I'd like him to try and find somebody in athletics that's been more academically conscious than I have been over the years. I mean, I'm basically responsible for two academic chairs being set up here for professors, millions of dollars raised for the library, and I don't know a number of other things that I won't even bother getting into right now, plus the fact that in 29 years we've had three kids that have played 4 years that don't have a degree. So my record on academics is so far and away above what the record of most people is that it becomes ludicrous to comment on something like that. Another thing that was brought up was the fact that I had demeaned the alumni by not speaking at alumni functions. Well, my contract says, coach shall make four speaking engagements per year at university functions. The selection of the specific functions shall be at coach's discretion, but shall include at least two varsity club functions, a varsity club being the financial support unit for the athletic program, which would be stone cold broke if it wasn't for basketball over this past several years. It's just amazing how little revenue would come into that organization without what basketball has done. But back to this thought on four appearances. Two of them at varsity club functions I'd already made if it was the fiscal year, or if it was the calendar year. In fact, I've made more than that. If it was the fiscal year, I'd make them at the end of the fiscal year, as I have for years. The other two functions, in fact, my attorney advised me to make absolutely no appearances whatsoever. He said, why expose yourself to somebody saying that he was mistreated by the way you answer a question, or by something that you said, or he didn't like the nature of your talk, or whatever. And he said, and I talked to a lot of people about this, and they said, with these sanctions that have been placed in front of me by the trustees and the president, that I just had to eliminate exposure as much as I possibly could to protect myself. The president asked a man that was a very good friend, is a very good friend of mine, a man I respect very much, named Ed Williams, to serve as an intermediary between the administration and me. Why? I don't know. I didn't ask for that. I have never talked to this president face-to-face since the 30th of May. And yet I see where he makes comments like, well, he just was continuing to do things that were violations of policy. It was only going to be a matter of time. If that's the case, that's like me having a player that isn't shooting with the proper technique at the free throw line, and I just keep letting it go and letting it go and letting it go without saying something to the guy. And then all of a sudden I say, you lose your scholarship because you don't shoot free throws the right way. I mean, I've always felt that it's incumbent upon people in authoritative positions to tell those people what they want done. If this isn't exactly what they want, then tell them. Well, he brought up the point to this man I mentioned, a former Vice President Ed Williams, that he would like for me to speak at these alumni functions in Chicago where you've attended and in Indianapolis. And I told Ed, I said, I've already made the four commitments that I'm going to make. And I said, my attorney has advised me not even to make those, but I'm going to make the four commitments to live up to my obligation in the contract. And in addition to these two varsity club things, I was going to speak, as I have for several years, to an Indiana Alumni Association function in southern Indiana that was going to raise somewhere between $30,000 and $35,000 for cancer. The second one was to the students. I've always felt that the students were a part of basketball here, just like the players were part of the student body. And I explained to Dr. Williams, I said, and I can't expose myself any more than I absolutely have to. Went back to the president, told him, came back to me and said, well, he understands that, and he said that's fine, and those were his exact words. Then I find that that's one of the reasons why I've been fired. So what I'm getting at here is that there's just such an incredible spin placed on these things by them, instead of just saying, hey, I don't like the guy, I don't want him as our basketball coach. I'm the president. I don't want the guy. I'm asking him to leave. I'd have been gone in a heartbeat. And it would have sure saved everybody a lot of problems that have not yet even begun to surface. That's, as I said, this is not an administration that I fit into. For 24 years here, I fit pretty well into the administration, into what was going on, into what people wanted me to do, into how they felt things should be done. So we wind up here today with the circumstances surrounding all of this that I think are absolutely, totally unnecessary.
If you were the president of Indiana, how would you have handled Coach Bob Knight?
Well, in the beginning, with this Reed thing, if John Ryan were the president, he would have just said, this thing has been investigated 3 years ago, and there was nothing found that should take us any further with it. That's it, period. And that's exactly the way it would have been handled. And I think most fair-minded people thinking about what's involved here, what has transpired, all the circumstances would have done exactly the same thing. I was dealing with people, unfortunately, that were scared to death of the media. I was dealing with people that gave no thought whatsoever to what was right, but were talking and thinking simply about how are we best going to appear in these circumstances. What's the best thing we can do? How can we best stay away from media criticism in this thing? Bob Hamill, who, as you know well, is a close friend of mine and a longtime sports editor of the paper here in Bloomington, felt that when national press came after the administration here when I was retained back in May, that was the death blow for me. That at that point they had to decide because of what transpired, all right, we have to get rid of this guy. And again, as I tell you, just tell me. Don't make up something. Don't try to present reasons that are absolute fabrications. I've never seen a guy better at spinning things in somebody's to somebody's benefit than this Vice President Simpson is. This is a very, very dangerous and treacherous guy to be involved with the university.
If an AD walked in, sat down, and said, Coach, I want to look at you as our next head basketball coach, what would you tell him you were going to bring to his university, having all this gone on at Indiana and been there for 29 years with an unbelievable record academically and athletically? What would you say to him?
The first thing that I would do with anybody asking me, would I be interested in a particular job? I would give them the names of people that I've worked for in the past and said, before you do anything else, I want you to call these people and get a feel for what I've been like to work with over the years. That's the first thing that I would do. And I have not even the slightest hesitancy to do that to people that I've worked for both here and at West Point.
If I walked in the door as an athletic director, said, Coach, I've been an admirer of how you run a program. I've seen what's transpired. I'm considering talking to you about our vacant head basketball job. What kind of coach would I be getting, and what kind of person would I be getting to deal with in my athletic department?
Well, what I'd like to think that I would be described as by people that I've worked for in the past, with the exception of these few people here, David, would be that I would be a guy like I have recruited for 29 years for every sport that's here, that's asked me to talk to a kid, to write a kid, to visit with a parent. I've raised money for four or five different sports here, in addition to the library and a lot of other things. Anything that I'm asked to do for the university or the athletic department, I'm going to do. I've raised thousands of dollars that these people don't even know anything about for athletics and for other things here. What we have been able to do since I've been here is set up a $3.2 million endowment for basketball. Our basketball scholarships are far more than covered by endowments, and a lot of that has been raised by our own basketball golf tournament, and a lot contributed by people because of what we've done with our basketball program. The rest, in fact, has been contributed from that. What that enables this athletic department to do is take all of the money that would go into basketball scholarships, the 13 of them, that could they would vary from about $10,000 for in-state students to close to $20,000 for out-of-state students, times 13. All that money each year goes into other sports. We have the lowest recruiting budget by far of any school in the Big Ten, probably the lowest there is in the country, again by far of all schools competing at our level. Academically, it is incredibly important to me that we maintain a very high rate of graduation, and we've got the statistics to certainly far more than back that up. My involvement with the university, I think, has been very adequately displayed over the years by the money that I've raised for various units within the university, and particularly the library. So I want you, as this athletic director, to have a basketball program that is successful, that wins, that competes well at any level of competition, and one that you can really be pleased with academically. And I think that's what we've had here for 29 years, and that's what I'd like to take someplace else right now. There are a lot of people in the media that I have gotten along very well with, and they're all people, however, that I know. I find almost without exception that the people I don't get along particularly well with are those that I don't know, or those that have had an axe to grind because of something that I may not have done for them.
You know, it's interesting. You don't toot your own horn about things you do, donating money to the library fund, helping the less fortunate. We got a phone call on our radio show tonight from Bob Craig. And the whole Luke Recker situation, the way he left, I was very critical of. The car accident that he got into, you were cast as the villain, it seemed, in all the different reports I read and saw. And what people don't realize is the thousands of dollars you've given or helped raise for that family. Bob came on our show, called on his own to say all that you've done. You never let people know about that stuff, and I think sometimes it casts you in a bad light.
Well, David, I don't let anybody know about things like that, because if somebody really wants to understand and really wants to know about those things, they can find out on their own. And it's obvious that in many cases, people in the news media just don't want to do that. And that's why the news media has such a poor rating with the general public across the country. I mean, I've seen polls where of all the various institutions that are somewhat of a public nature, nothing has a lower rating in terms of believability, credibility, than the news media has. So it isn't like I am at odds with the American Association of Rabbis, Ministers, and Priests when I'm at odds with the news media.
We had Coach K on one night on our show, and he said that he thinks the big problem in Indiana was lack of communication. He didn't point the finger at anyone. He just said, I think lack of communication. If there had been better communication, the whole situation that we just went through would have been avoided. Agree, disagree?
Well, I went back and said that something I said earlier. If you don't want me to coach, just come tell me. And that eliminates everything. It's difficult to know that a president thinks that it's only a matter of time, or that you have been doing all of these things without that president telling you. I would like to think that the really great people that I've worked for over the years, whether it has involved me or somebody else, have said to me, if I have an assistant coach, as an example, that isn't doing what I want done on the practice floor, I don't wait 2 years and fire the guy. I don't wait till a week later and whatever. I mean, I tell him right then. I said, David, you know, you've got to show the guy how to set the screen. You just can't stand there and let him screen. You've got to teach the guy how to set the screen. And that to me is a situation that I think is in a lot of other facets of where this university is headed. I can remember when we had a lot of departments that were rated very highly across the board. I've seen where the faculty has said that we have slipped immensely in a lot of different areas, that our entrance scores are lower than they used to be. There's a lot of unrest on this campus in terms of faculty unrest. A very highly thought of professor here was on television just the other night saying that in his opinion, as a faculty member, basketball was one of the programs that was run very effectively and very efficiently, and the president ought to pay a lot of attention to some other areas and just let basketball where it was. So it isn't the mail that I've gotten, the things that I've been sent, I'm dealing with probably a half a dozen people, six or seven people on the Board of Trustees that have never said a word to me about anything, never asked me about a single thing, have never said, we need to talk to you, we want to talk, never. And to this point, I haven't received a personal thing from one single member on the Board of Trustees, other than the two that I've known for since I came here, relative to, well, thanks, good luck, best wishes, or from the administration or anything else. I mean, it's a different approach. It's actually something that, as I've said, I've been very uncomfortable with, and my wife even more so than me. This president's wife goes on with the newspaper and on television putting my wife in an incredible position, saying that, well, I want my friend Kara Knight to help me with return civility to this campus. All she had to do was pick up the telephone and call Kara. But that's not the way these people operate. And so we're really saddened, David, that we're leaving a community where we have enjoyed living, leaving people here that we have really liked and come to think of as great friends, and leaving a basketball situation that for 24 or 5 years we thoroughly enjoyed. That saddens us. But on the other hand, both my wife and I feel that this is a great opportunity for us to do what we want to do in an environment that we really enjoy, and that's certainly not this environment.
What type of job would you look at next? NBA, college? Isaiah came out yesterday and said, I want Coach Knight on my staff, and I want Dennis Rodman with me. That would be the most unlikely pairing I've ever heard of.
How good a competitor is Dennis Rodman?
He's a tremendous competitor.
How good a competitor am I?
You're right there with him.
Then it would not be such a bad matchup. The idea of what I want to do in the future rests almost solely in terms of commitment to college basketball. I greatly appreciate Isaiah's interest in my helping them, and I'll do so any way that I can. But I've got some thoughts and ideas on what I want to do offensively and defensively, and do it with the college game, recruit the kind of kids that I've had for the most part here, and just college basketball has been something that I have been frustrated with on occasion, been unhappy with on occasion, but by and large have had a great love affair with since first becoming a player at the college level back in 1959. So that's something that I would hope that I'll be able to continue.
The president said he was referring most inquiries I read in the newspaper to his attorneys, but that you cannot coach, according to your contract, in the Big Ten, in the state of Indiana, in the state of Kentucky. Is that accurate? There has been a lot made out of that.
I think that that's something that that my attorney will address. The whole idea there as the people with whom that contract was made back in 1981 or 1982 was something that came from me, really, rather from them, and it had to do exclusively with my leaving of my own volition to go somewhere else, and this is an entirely different matter than that.
Do you think if you took a job, let's say it's next April, you get a brand new job at a great school, you're happy, your wife's happy, that you would be a different Bob Knight or the same Bob Knight that you've always been? Do you feel like you want to change at all what you've done? Digger Phelps made a comment on TV the other day that he thought maybe you needed to deal with your anger more. And is that something that's legitimate?
Well, I think that I spend a lot of time talking to people in all different kinds of areas of expertise about the psychological aspects of coaching and teaching, definition, anger, silence, exuberance are all teaching tools. And how do you use each one of them to the best advantage? So I've done that and continue to do that in a lot of different areas, not just this area or that area, but a lot of different areas that are part of the psychological approach to teaching and motivating and getting kids to play well, and getting kids to learn, to be successful, to use basketball as a tool. Nothing makes me feel better than to hear from a kid, as I have a lot recently, that the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because of what I learned as a basketball player in Indiana. And that's what I want to take to somebody else. Perception, what is the perception that a guy has of me that's been around a little bit? What is your perception of me? I would not in any way think that your perception of having been around me and the basketball program that I've run would be anything other than, hey, I'd love to have this guy coach my team. My next question now, have you ever come across somebody that has been around me, that has come down and watched us practice, that has been there to see what I'm trying to do, that would have a negative approach to what we've done here at Indiana?
No, never.
Well, perception is not something that I think I can be concerned about.
But perception becomes reality sometimes in people's minds, maybe recruits when you go out and try and recruit.
Well, I think we've recruited pretty well. I think that we've always recruited well, even when our team has been for us down a little bit. But, you know, we've not been destitute. I mean, it's been 7 years since I think we had as good a team as there was in the country. But where are we during that 7 years? We're probably almost always in the top 20 teams in the country. We've averaged over 20 wins a year. We've been in the NCAA tournament all of those years. Haven't done as well as we would like to do. The vast majority of time we've been in the NCAA, we haven't done as well as we'd like to do, even with good teams at times. But if I did what would be acceptable to, laudable for, pleasing to the media, then the one person that I've let down is me.
What would you say to a parent? You get the job at XYZ University and you sit down with the mother of the top player in the country and she said, "Coach, I've never met you. I've heard all these horror stories from the media. Why should I send my son to play for you?"
I just say, "Mrs. Jones, here are the phone numbers of every mother that's ever had a kid play for me. You call them and see what they think." And then I'd turn to Billy and I'd say, "Billy, here are the phone numbers of every kid that's ever played for me. Call them and see what they think." I don't know of anybody else that does that. I don't know. I've asked every kid I've ever recruited. Do other schools give you the phone numbers of all their players? Do they give you the phone numbers of all the parents? Call them and see.
It's amazing the perception that we were talking about with your wife. The perception of you is so different, and every person that makes up the perception has probably never even asked you a question in a press conference, let alone sat down and talked to you.
Well, that's what we go back to your earlier question about perception. You know, I can't work on perception. I'll work on what I am. Here's what I am. Kids graduate. We play about as well over any given period. We won the most games of any Big Ten team in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. So we've been on top for 30 years. Our kids have a chance to play in the NBA. We don't have a single kid that played in the NBA that's destitute after he got out of the NBA. How many other kids are there like that? They made a lot of money, but they don't have anything. Our guys are all doing well. And I think that what we're always going to want is a kid that can count on us and that we can count on. And I think there are a lot of those kids out there, and I think we'll get them.
What kind of a fit would be good for you for a school? Not a name of a school so much as what are you looking for? Is climate or location important?
What I wanted when I came here was a school that played in the top flight of basketball competition in college basketball. Not just played in it, but could compete in it. That had an opportunity to recruit well, that had a situation where you were going to be well supported, which I always have been until the last 5 years, as we've talked about. Well, I've got no complaints at all about my first 24 years at Indiana that weren't quickly resolved, either because I was wrong or because whoever I was dealing with felt that he was wrong and changed. I mean, there were a lot of times with give and take where we came out where we're both really satisfied, but that just hasn't been the case here. And I think a school that has a good, sound athletic program. Like, I've always been a guy that really enjoys football. A lot of basketball coaches are afraid of football. I mean, I played football in high school and was a pretty decent player and have always really enjoyed football. I probably have at least as many close friends and certainly people that I respect that have coached or are coaching football as I do in basketball.
Bill Parcells.
Parcells, Ditka, Shem Beckler, Paterno, Bear Bryant, Bud Wilkinson. I mean, I've got a long list of people in football, and the guys that are coaching today, or like Dick Vermeil, or hell, John Gruden used to be my ball boy. when his family lived here, when his dad, Jim, was an assistant coach here. Jim Moore, Bill Polian, Belichick, Art Modell, Bill Ford. I mean, the people that I know in football are probably more than I know in basketball. So I'd like to just see those people that just say, Coach, come in here and give us the best program that you can give us. And that's what we did here.
Would you change anything about Bob Knight going into a new situation because you don't have a 29-year record or friendships or relationships at a school?
You know, I don't know what I could change. If we hadn't been able to recruit, I'd have to figure out a different way to recruit. If we hadn't been able to score, I'd have to figure out a different offense. If we hadn't been able to stop people from scoring, I'd have to figure out a different defense. I've got some wrinkles that I'd like to look at offensively and defensively, as I have every year. If I didn't basically get along with people, then I'd have to look at that a little bit. But I don't think that you can really fault a guy that gets along with most everybody he comes across. The one institution that I've never gotten along with is the press. And that may be...
Why is that?
Well, that may be a reluctance on my part to accept the press as a whole. Have I gotten along well with you?
Absolutely.
Have I gotten along well with Tim Weigel? Certainly. Have I gotten along with Bill Gleason or Bill Jouse? Certainly. Or most anybody else up there that I know. Guys that I don't know up there, I've never gotten along with, but how can you get along with somebody you don't know that makes up his mind as to what you are without ever talking to you?
In terms of what you're going to do this offseason, how do you spend your time? I mean, you are a high-energy guy. You don't sleep a lot. You enjoy basketball. It's, you said, your love affair. What do you do with your days?
Well, I'll figure out things to do. You know, I've got the... I still have a fishing rod and a golf club and a shotgun, and then I'll figure out things to do, and we'll go some places and visit some things and some people, and I'll always have some tapes with me and some notes, and I'll spend some time working on basketball, and we'll be very much abreast of recruiting across the country, and when the time comes, we'll know some kids that we're going to have a chance to get that would be very good players for us.
Today's paper, they talked about this CBA coach that came in as an assistant to Mike Davis and how they may scrap what you have done for 29 years offensively so they can, quote-unquote, run and gun and up-tempo. Why change something that has worked so successfully for so long, or is it anything to do with Bob Knight they want to disassociate themselves from?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them that question. That's their concern, not mine. Chances are they might not have a real grasp of what we did offensively.